How many of the devotees here chanted 32 rounds or more? 32 rounds or more. First time?
Yeah.
Nice experience? What we did wasn't really a japa retreat, more like a japa workshop, because with a japa retreat there's much more preparation and, like, you know, getting immersed in the mood and the spirit of increasing the chanting. But even within a short span of time, especially with the association of all the devotees, it makes it easier. So the theme for a japa retreat or the experience that we just had is how to improve chanting. And a very simple formula on how to improve chanting is through devotion. Right? So, I'm going to... When you think of devotion, we can look for some hands raised and volunteers. When you think of devotion, bhakti, what's a synonym? Something that is a very critical ingredient to devotion. There's a particular term that one of our acharyas, Baladev Vidyabhusan, used to describe what devotion is, or if you want to increase your devotion, what is it that you have to give attention to? So when you think of bhakti, what's an English synonym or Sanskrit term? Submissive attitude. Okay, sure, that's devotion. Anyone else? Faith? Certainly faith.
Vairagya,
detachment. Okay.
Surrender.
Humility, sure. Humility.
Yeah.
Love. Yeah. Love. What else?
Dedication.
Commitment. Commitment? Okay.
Dedication.
Dedication. Yeah. Devotion. Dedication. Sure. Anyone else want to say? Submissive, you said? Surrender. I'm hearing too many voices, not one.
Service.
Ah.
Desire.
Okay. Okay, we got a good list.
Viraha.
Okay. It's very close to the word that... All of those words, not like those aren't right answers and the one I'm about to give is the right answer. They're all right answers. The word that he used to describe when you want to increase bhakti, one must have trishna. Someone knows the meaning? Trishna? No, that's Krishna. This is T, trishna.
Thirst.
There's a, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Harinam Chintamani, it's a book, he describes the stage of anartana vritti, eradication of unwanted things of the heart. Can you hear me okay back there? Okay. There are categories of anartas. And one of them is asat trishna. Thirst for the temporary. An attraction or hankering for the temporary. Asat trishna. So bhakti means Krishna trishna or sat trishna. Thirst for the eternal, or thirst for serving Krishna. Think of some examples where there isn't thirst. Supposing you just had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of liquid, and somebody offers you a glass of water. Maybe nice, fresh, pure spring water. It's no thank you. Or you just ate a big meal, and they bring some very nice food, prasadam, maha prasadam. It's even something, if the object is very nice, but there's no Krishna, then there isn't an attraction for that very nice thing, although it's very nice. So, same with chanting. We've been hearing that, let's take the Shikshastakam verse number one, the glories of the chanting of the holy name. Cheto darpanam marjanam pavamahadavagni nirvapanam shreya kairava chandrika, so on, that nice description of the glories of the holy name. But unfortunately, durdaivam, I don't have attraction because I don't have thirst, because there isn't bhakti in my heart. So how to awaken attraction? It's like, you know, one way to become hungry is don't eat for a while. You become hungry. Or you want to be attracted to water, just don't drink for a while. But with devotion, it doesn't work like that. Just don't do any devotional service for a while, and you develop a desire for devotional service. It doesn't work the same way. So how do you get this Krishna for Krishna? Thirst for Krishna. And one of the very practical ways is to associate with those that have that quality. From a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada often quoted, Sangat Sanjayate Kama. So, Sanjaya, according to the association you keep, you develop desires. But if that's the case, it's the association that we keep, then one thing that we can do is select good association. But even in selecting good association, we're dependent. We're not independent, or something that we do. You can't go and get some taste. It's receive. When bhakti, because that's our way of improving our chanting, if the bhakti increases, if our thirst for Krishna increases, then there's something that happens. Maybe some of you can recall during the 32 rounds that you chanted, or more, or some of you it was less, but during the chanting that you were doing today, there were periods when it was really nice, and there were some periods when it wasn't as nice. So when it was really nice, there was some, you could say, magic happening. It wasn't exactly what you were doing, because maybe when it wasn't going so nicely, you were doing the same thing. So what's that magic? And I want to make a point that there's, in material life, we're trained, our academic training is achieve. How many of you, when you were young and going to school, you heard from your parents, you not only heard it, you got bombarded, achieve, you can do it. Study hard. Work hard. You can achieve. pound and hammer and hammer and hammer and hammer. Right? Right. Bhakti is different. It's not a matter of achieving something, it's a matter of receiving something. There's a pushing energy, and there's a, from Krishna's side, a pulling energy. Again, think of the chanting that was going nicely. Something was happening, it was magical, and you were being pulled. There's a little story. Many of you know Ralph Waldo Emerson because he very much liked Bhagavad Gita. Thoreau and Emerson liked Bhagavad Gita, Eastern philosophy in general. Can you hear me? Back there? Okay. So, when he was very old, in his, not so old, but you know, he was 65, 70 years old, he was living on a farm, and there was a young heifer. That's like a male, young, not a cow, but a bull. And it was time for the animals to come into the barn, and all the other animals went into the barn except the young heifer. So he got behind the young heifer and started pushing. The heifer, you know, stubborn. He dug in, and he wasn't going to move. So his son came, much stronger than he, and he started pushing. The heifer didn't move. They both got behind. They're lucky they didn't get kicked. They both are pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, and the heifer wouldn't move. And at that farm, there was a maid, and she smiled seeing these two strong men pushing and pushing, and the heifer wouldn't move. And so she went and put her finger in salt and held her finger like this in front of the heifer's mouth. He opened his mouth, and she just, with her little finger, pulled the heifer into the barn and left. Where it's an example to say, a pulling potency can be greater than an achieving and pushing potency. And Krishna means all attractive. One of the things that we didn't do, because we didn't have time during this retreat, is go through an exercise called Trataka. Trataka is, it's in our Vaishnav tradition, it's outside of our Vaishnav tradition also, where the words of the mantra that one chants, you look at the words of the mantra as you're chanting. And it assists in concentration. I could give examples, but they're examples of our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas who use that system for their chanting. A very prominent one is the son of Lord Nityananda, whose name was Virabhadra. And Virabhadra had a Shila that had a Maha Mantra in Bengali carved in the Shila, and he would sit in front of the stone and chant his rounds. So during today's chanting, I hit a lull. So I got a mantra sheet, put it in front of me, and the lull stopped. Because I was chanting while looking at, because my mind was not focused, so I wanted to focus my mind. And it was very effective. But as I was chanting, not only my mind was focused on the sound, but also the meaning, because that's another instruction of Sanatana Goswami. When you're chanting mantra, you should be reflecting upon the meaning. So what's the meaning of Krishna? He's attractive. He's all attractive. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare. And then Rama, reservoir of all pleasure. Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, people sometimes ask, the Rama in the Mahamantra, does it refer to Lord Ramachandra, or does it refer to Lord Balaram? And he says, people get into big arguments over it. You know how religious people can, no, it means this, no, it means that. No, it means this, no, it means that. And he said, they're both right. And Balarama is, he gives strength. So for devotional service, we need strength. But the strength that we need in devotional service is a descending strength, or it's like the spark that comes in the proximity of the fire, and the spark becomes bright, ablaze. But take the spark away from the fire, it becomes dull. Its intensity diminishes. So that started to happen when I was doing this Tratika exercise. It was a prayer that I didn't, like, wasn't contrived, it just started to happen. Krishna, please attract me to you, to your abode, to your service. He's all attractive. It's not difficult for him. But it's a matter, a prayer like that is opening your heart to something that's already there. And Hare Rama, to do that requires strength. Oh, Balaram, please provide that strength. And the strength comes just from association. More than just the exercise of making the sound, but in a spirit of desiring that association, desiring that relationship. It was a very nice experience. As I mentioned in the morning session, we all want to experience something, especially today. People, you know, learning things is less important to them than experiencing. Experiential opportunity. Just like when you do your Ananda Mela next weekend. I hope the weather's better than this weekend. One of the most popular booths is the Japa booth, because people can experience something. They want. So, to go back to the starting point, to go, the purpose of the retreat is to improve in our chanting japa. And to improve chanting japa is where there's more devotion. And when there's more devotion, and the primary ingredient that you'll find is thirst, Krishna. But that thirst is something that we're hankering for, so it's becoming attracted more than doing something. Just repeating the steps that I went through with you. It's, the rules of the game are altogether different than material achievement. It's not a material achievement issue. It's a being receptive to the all-attractive Krishna and becoming attracted, like this example, the nice plate of food. But if you're full, no thank you. When there's that, the opposite is when there's hankering or eagerness. When Rupa Goswami, many of you are studying the Bhakti Shastri. Yes? How many are studying Bhakti Shastri or have done so already? So one of the books that you'll study is Nectar of Instruction. And according to Rupa Goswami, there's six items that make bhakti strong. And the first one is the same item. It's enthusiasm. The word is different. It's utsahan. But Krishna and utsahan, they're like brothers. One who is very enthusiastic, that has some thirst for something, some eagerness for something. the object is Krishna. He's all attractive. But he who is all attractive, I have durdaivam. Idrishya mahajani nada ragam. No attraction. So how do we get that attraction? Associating with those that have attraction and understanding it's not just something that I need to do, but to understand who is Krishna, and like we were discussing, that gap between us and Krishna, and wanting to bridge the gap, really wanting it. In how many have read Krishna book? Krishna book? Okay. Krishna book is very nice. It's a summary, Prabhupada's summary study of the 10th canto. And towards the very end of Krishna book is prayers by the personified Vedas. And that chapter in the 10th canto, it's chapter 87, it's the longest chapter in the entire 10th canto. The 10th canto is the longest chapter, or the longest canto, and the longest chapter is prayers by the personified Vedas. And it comes almost at the end of the 10th canto. And at the end of the 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami has managed to elevate Maharaj Parikshit beyond material considerations. He's fixed in transcendence. He's heard the whole 9 cantos and all of Krishna's pastimes, 10th canto. Then he pauses and says, wait a minute, how did this happen? All that's been going on here is you're using something material, your tongue, and I'm using something material, my ear, and I got to this transcendental position. How did that happen? How can you use something material to get to a spiritual place? Good question. And Shukadeva Goswami says, very good question. This is such an important question that long, long ago, many sages were discussing this. And when they were discussing it, they referred to a conversation that took place long, long ago. In other words, it's a classic question. The four Kumaras were discussing with the personified Vedas this very same question. And it's like, wow, this is an important question. And the chapter is an answer to that question. And it's a very important theological issue, like, you know, how do you get out of the material world once you're in the material world? Because all you have to access is material. The answer that's given, in brief, is because everything comes from God, it has its original spiritual capacity. So when the tongue is used in service to God, it becomes spiritualized. When the ear is used in service to God, it becomes spiritualized. The same tongue, same ear, in service to the Supreme Lord, becomes spiritualized. Then he discusses about the mind, which is very important in improving the quality of your chanting, the headline of our discussion right now, and the purpose of the retreat. Improve the quality of chanting. One of the biggest problems is our mind. It doesn't want to cooperate. The soul says yes. I'll share a little anecdotal thing. I was visiting a kind of remote place, and there was a family that wanted to host a program, so they wanted to invite all their friends. They said, we're going to have 36 people here. I said, no. They said, no, they all confirmed. I said, here's the rule. Of those that say, yes, I'll come, it's just a social yes, and half of them will come. And of those half that come, they'll come at the very end. I said, no, 36 will come, but that's what happened. And so, we sat down, program was ready to begin and the people weren't there. Not even one of them came. It was just the regulars that came. You know how it is. And there was a bunch of children. They all sat in the front. So I said, okay. What I had planned was, you know, Krishna Consciousness 101. I'll just deal with the kids. So I asked them this question. I said, listen very carefully. And don't speak out of turn. Raise your hand at the end because I'm going to ask you. I'll tell you ahead of time what the question is. And then you can supply the answer. So we're going along the path of life. In fact, birth after birth, and we're experiencing this and experiencing that and experiencing this and experiencing that, and it doesn't meet our expectation. It's not really making us happy, and there's so many problems. So then you can just decide, look, I've had enough of this program. I want to go to Krishna. So why isn't it you can just do a U-turn and go to Krishna? Why not? What's the problem? What's the obstacle? Why doesn't it happen like that? You know, they giggled and this and that and said a few things. And then one little girl sitting right here said, my soul says yes, but my senses say I want to enjoy. So she inspired a boy, and the boy said, and the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. She was like, you know, 4 years old, and he was 6 years old. My mind says, the soul says yes, but the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. And so it's not easy. The soul saying yes. On the soul level, we want to be with Krishna. The mind's very rebellious. So how do we have the mind, instead of being asat Krishna, that's an anartha. Remember from earlier in the discussion? Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that that's one of the anarthas that's within the heart. It's a thirst for the temporary. How do we deal with that? How do we make it thirst for Krishna? So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary from chapter 87 of the 10th canto. Very short. A man is meditating on the Lord with his mind. But the mind is material. The Lord knows this and considers. Just see. My devotee is trying to follow my instructions, to fix his mind upon me, even though his mind is limited and cannot reach me. Let me help. That's the pull. The mind is like a lake. And the Lord makes waves in the lake that touch upon the soul of the devotee who is trying to fix his mind upon Krishna. You want to hear it again? I'll read it again. It's nice. It's poetic, but it helps us understand that which is beyond our experience. So Krishna, I'll read the whole thing. A man is meditating on the Lord with his mind. But the mind is material. The Lord knows this and considers. Just see. My devotee is trying to follow my instructions, to fix his mind upon me, even though his mind is limited and cannot reach me. Let me help. So how does that attraction come? The mind is like a lake, and the Lord makes waves in the lake that touch upon the soul of the devotee who is trying to fix his mind upon Krishna. The mind is material. Behind that covering, that material element, there's a spiritual mind, but it's dormant as the soul. The soul's spiritual form, the soul, the life of the soul is buried in forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. But even this material mind, like the tongue and like the ear, the mind also can become spiritualized in that manner. Krishna makes waves in the lake that then on the mind that touch upon the soul. And that way, the mind can touch Krishna. It's a descending mercy process. So if we want to improve our chanting, you have to know the science. Or you have to increase your bhakti. That it's that hankering for Krishna. Trying to carry out the instructions that Krishna gives sincerely, knowing our limitation. That limitation brings the feeling of humility, genuine humility. It's beyond my capacity. I'm very tiny, and this task is very great. So the mind in that way becomes spiritualized by becoming attracted to Krishna. In the Bhagavatam, the word is rahasya. And rahasya means mystery. It's mysterious. It's not like something that we ordinarily experience in material life. Material life, it's, you know, go get it. Conquer it. Control it. Make it yours. Achieve. And we hear it. We've heard it over and over again. And we follow the path. And sure enough, we got this and we got that. And we're convinced that we can do it. Compete. Just apply yourself enough and you can get it. Get that carrot. So, taste or Krishna or attraction for Krishna, it's actually the soul's natural condition. Consider, Krishna is all attractive and we're part and parcel of Krishna. It's natural for us to be attracted to Krishna. This present situation is unnatural. So here's another little example, a Vedic example. In Vedic culture, it's not how things happen today, but Prabhupada described the system. When Krishna was present, this is how it happened. The young boys and young girls, when they're not, you know, pre-adolescent, they're just 5 and 6 and 7 years old, they get married. And what does a 5 and 6 and 7 year old know about marriage? They don't. But, you know, this boy and that girl and the parents agree and they're married. So she stays with her parents and he stays with his parents. But on his birthday, she brings something very nice, something nice to eat, and he appreciates, oh, this is very tasty. And then the next birthday, and before he knows what, you know, male-female thing is all about, it's, she's my wife, and she's bringing something that I like. And she's very happy to see that he's happy, and so on. And so some affinity for one another grows before they even know what male-female thing is about. They see it with their adults, but they don't know what it is because it's not part of their experience. But in course of time, when they're of mature age, then he and she live together as husband and wife. They were already married, and that just matures naturally over time. Similarly, not identically, but similarly, we have a natural attraction for Krishna. A natural Krishna for Krishna. And our practices, like participating in this retreat to strengthen that attraction, or our day-to-day practices when you return back to your homes, the daily sadhana that we do is meant to increase that devotion for Krishna. Awaken our devotion for Krishna. Rupa Goswami writes in the Dugdha Madhava, he offers a prayer as if he were one of us, that like a young boy and a young girl have attraction for one another, and he is always calling her name, she is always calling his name, let me call your name in that way. With the... No. As if he's in our position, where we don't have that taste yet for Krishna's holy name, but we're practicing. And by practicing and practicing and practicing, because it's natural, it comes, it awakens. There's the introductory verse to Vidagdha Madhava is found in Antilila Chaitanya Charitamrita. Maybe you know that section where Rupa Goswami has written Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava, and he's in Puri. He actually had the idea when he was in Vrindavan. He'd like to write a drama about Krishna's pastimes. It's in his mind he was composing the drama. And as he was traveling to Puri, he stopped at a village named Satyabhamapur. And Satyabhama appeared in his dream and said, make it two dramas. Krishna in Vrindavan and Krishna out of Vrindavan. It was just a dream. He didn't share it with anybody. And then he went to Puri. And after some weeks of being in Puri and he's beginning to write his drama, he hadn't yet made it two, Lord Chaitanya instructed him, same thing. Make two dramas. I understand you're writing a drama about Krishna. Make it two dramas. Then he could understand, Lord Chaitanya is omniscient. Not an accident. Satyabhama is the consort of Krishna. So, he started making two dramas, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And the introductory verse is exemplary of taste. I'll read the translation. I do not know how much nectar do the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. In addition, when the holy name enters into the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. That's his introductory verse. When Ramananda Roy heard this verse, he said, this isn't poetry. This is a shower of nectar that Rupa Goswami has composed. And to be able to do that, I can understand he's gotten Lord Chaitanya's mercy, his full mercy. And then Lord Chaitanya said, it's true. Rupa Goswami received my full mercy. Because the poetry is describing in metaphor something that Rupa Goswami is experiencing. Millions of wishing to have millions of tongues and millions of ears, and the mind becomes inert, the senses become stunned, just chanting Krishna's name. So we're not there. But by following Rupa Goswami's teachings, we'll get there, because his teachings are to get us there. So now we'll go back to where we are. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it the counting game. Okay, how many rounds do I have left? How much time? I guess it'll take me another half an hour to finish my rounds. He writes like that, the counting game. So to move from that mechanical chanting towards this more advanced stage of chanting, Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicates in Sanskrit terminology there's three things. A desire to attain Krishna. He simplified it by this expression, Krishna, please accept me. So it can be, you know, a very distant thing, just Krishna, just nod. Just smile. You don't even have to say okay. Just accept me. Then, you know, gradations and further to be accepted into Krishna's entourage, his loving pastimes, eternally in the spiritual world. But some initial acknowledgement, a desire to attain that position, once again, our relationship with Krishna. Then the next is wanting to render some service to Krishna. So in our stage, it's whatever it might be. You know, some devotees came and before we got here, they swept us, you know, because there was stuff all over the place. A little service, or clean the pots, or pick up the pieces of trash because, you know, we're in the public park here, and whatever little service, and, you know, just keep going and going and going, and, you know, our eternal confidential service with Krishna. But it starts with doing a little something. Remember, vividly, I remember a lecture in New York when Prabhupada was describing Krishna is very appreciative of any service that's rendered. And he never forgets any service that's rendered. So he was making that point, and then he got very emotionally charged and said, if someone comes to this temple and he does the smallest service, then the decibels went up. And even he may just turn one screw, Krishna will never forget. He will accept that service and Krishna will never forget. So, the desire to serve Krishna. And a wish in that service that there's a loving relationship, an exchange of loving affection, loving feeling with Krishna. It's natural. That's thirst. We may not be there, but the object is certainly worthy of our attraction, far more so than so many other things that we're involved with. By our conditioning in the material atmosphere. So sadhana bhakti is to gradually move in that direction. And consciously, and from the heart, meaning, you know, with sincerity, very strongly desiring that benefit. One time, so that's, you know, the reciprocation from Krishna's side, that loving relationship. Once a devotee, very senior devotee, in a confidential conversation, a room conversation, wasn't a morning walk, it was just a small group of people, asked Prabhupada, what will it be like when we leave this world and join you in the spiritual world? What will happen when we enter into that spiritual realm? What will it be like? Prabhupada's answer was, if you mature in your devotion, if you are ready, I will meet you at the edge of a grove, and I will take you before Krishna, and I will leave you there with him. It's mercy, and highly personal. So we can't, what's our qualification? We don't have qualification. But those that have qualification can very mercifully bestow qualification. And through their association, gradually advance along the spiritual path. So some of the feelings that we can have in our present stage that are spiritual feelings are feelings of gratitude. Or perhaps feeling very humble, like, you know, some of these other expressions of what bhakti is. Feeling humility. Feeling, I've received so much, I want to do something for our founder Acharya's mission. Just like this nice expression that I read this morning, where Shukadeva Goswami is saying, please understand this about the holy name so that you can induce others. You know, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement is a missionary movement. We're reaching out, you know, here in Seattle. You're doing it all over the place. But so that there's a spiritual impact, it needs to come from your heart, not just, you know, achieve something, get more people, but with a desire to please Krishna, a desire to serve Krishna, a desire to bring Krishna in contact with other people's lives so Krishna can attract them to him once again. Be that medium for Krishna's mercy. Not us, but Krishna's mercy. So we have to receive it. It's something like, I was thinking this during the morning's japa session. It's like an iron rod doesn't have any of the qualities of fire, but put it in fire and make the bellows go. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Make the bellows, make the iron hot like fire, and then you touch the iron to paper or to straw, it acts like fire, although it's just iron. So if we're going to positively impact, if we like service, and we want to do some service, the more we can bring our consciousness to Krishna, it's not a salvationist idea, it's part of our service. I can speak personally about this particular item very strongly. Something that I've realized about myself is I'm very service-oriented. I like to serve. In whatever situation, I don't like to do anything. I don't like to do it unless there's a very clear idea of service. But what's the purpose behind the service? It's that Krishna is pleased. And that you serve others. So the best way to serve others is you're like the iron in the fire. Or you're Krishna conscious. So going back to this example of prayers by the personified Vedas, but the tongue is material. And the ear is material. And the mind is material. What can we do? There, behind the activities of chanting, to prove the quality of our chanting, a strong desire to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, to fix your mind upon him, to call with real feeling Krishna's name. Even, I don't have attraction. Durdaivam idrisha mahajani raga. Well, there's a feeling. The feeling that says, I don't have any feeling. So grab a hold of that feeling and chant with that feeling. Krishna, I have no feeling. Yes? Stay with it. See what happens. That feeling will intensify and the presence of Krishna will be something that you feel. Chant with feeling. That's taste. Or Krishna. Some attraction for Krishna. I'll give a couple of other examples and we'll end. How many of you have read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita? Oh, a few. Well, if you read Prabhupada Lilamrita, something happens. And that something that happens is a strong feeling of appreciation and affection for Prabhupada, who you never met. And, you know, I could say in the early part of my Krishna consciousness, I gave my life to Prabhupada having never met him. Just by hearing about him. from those that had his association, which is what Lilamrita is. I had this experience with a South Indian couple, Srinivasan family, and you know what happens. He came to America for his job, and that means, you know, to get some money. And so they left behind their Sri Vaishnava practices, and they got association with devotees. They started chanting Hare Krishna. And I recommended that the wife, she was home alone, and, you know, son at school, and husband at work, and home alone, so read Lilamrita. She read Lilamrita cover to cover. The very day that she finished reading Lilamrita, she had a dream. Prabhupada very, you know, clearly came before her in her dream, was walking along a path, and stopped right in front of her, and recited to her three questions that she had had since she was a little girl, and gave answers to each of the three questions, and then smiled and left. She said, I went to many acharyas and learned pundits and asking those three questions. I never found anything that satisfied me. But Prabhupada, without my even asking, knew the questions and gave me the answers. How do you explain something like that? But there's some relationship that comes from hearing about these great souls, or Rupa Goswami, or any of our acharyas. Just by regular, we can associate through vani, is the point that I want to make. And through that association, those that have that taste, that strong attraction, vicariously, through their instructions, we can receive that. And in that way, improve our chanting. Because some attraction for Krishna, some eagerness to achieve Krishna's association. Two more things, we'll end. There's that verse that we read this morning, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram, Shikshastakam, verse number 5. I'm going to read Dravida's poetization of that verse that indicates taste. Your servant for eternity, I lost my true identity and fell into this horrid sea of birth and death, O Lord. O Nanda's son, please hear me, please hear my plea. By your sweet grace, consider me a speck of dust upon your lotus feet forevermore. And here's another rendering. This is a translation by Mahanidhi Swami. This morning I read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, and that was exquisite. But this is also very, very nice. O son of Nanda Krishna, king of the country of love, I appeal for your affection. I am your servant. I feel deep within myself that I have some connection with you. I am subordinate to you. But somehow, I am now in adverse circumstances. There are so many enemies within me trying to take me away from you. Therefore, I cannot give my full attention to you or your name. At the same time, I feel from the deepest place within my heart that you are my master. You are all and everything to me. My heart will never be satisfied without your companionship. So I appeal to you. I am under unfavorable circumstances. I am suffering. And without your grace, I do not find any relief from my present imprisoned condition. So through the prayers of elevated Vaishnavas, even our contemporary Vaishnavas, one can connect with those deeper feelings of attraction for Krishna despite our difficulty, whatever that may be. By the association of those great personalities, spiritual attraction can awaken. I'm going to tell two stories and then I'll end. Both Prabhupada stories. One is one that I've heard Malati Mataji share several times. It was her first experience of being in Prabhupada's association. And she had joined the Hare Krishna movement in San Francisco. And Prabhupada was invited to come and take part in a concert, some kind of an event. And she had never seen Prabhupada before, she just, like all of you, just heard about Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was going to arrive at the San Francisco airport. So this was at a time before they had the TSA and, you know, terrorism concerns. So people that were going to receive somebody coming off the plane could go right down into the boarding area, and where people would get off the plane and come out. So Malati shared, she was thinking, why does Prabhupada have to ride a plane? He's like, you know, he's mystical. He could just, like, come. Why does he have to ride a plane? We had that kind of mood about the incredible qualifications of Prabhupada. But he was riding the plane. So this was also before they had gates. So the plane came in, and they watched everybody go down the steps, like in India, you know, down the steps and walk over to the entranceway and then up a set of stairs to come into the terminal. They watched everybody come off the plane, and they didn't see Prabhupada come off the plane. So they were wondering what happened, and they're bewildered and disappointed and didn't know what to do. And then suddenly one of the devotees spotted Prabhupada down the bottom of the stairs. So she was around, because the stairs were going up and away, and then, because I saw a video of this. I wasn't there, but I saw a video. Someone had a video camera, and a kirtan started. And the devotees were chanting and dancing, and they started, like, levitating, just dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. And Prabhupada, she said it looked like a radiant sun was coming up the stairway. She couldn't see because she was on the other side. And there was this like little wall. And Prabhupada came around. And in those days, the devotees didn't know to pay obeisances. But everybody paid obeisances, like spontaneously. And she paid her obeisances, and her head was on the floor. And then when she finished paying her obeisances and raised her head a little bit, she saw Prabhupada's shoes right in front of her head. And then looked up. And Prabhupada had a big radiant smile. Without any training, just being in the presence of such a great personality, they all spontaneously fell to the floor, paid obeisances. And Satchinandan Swami told me this story about Prabhupada in Sweden, where they were seated in the lounge. It was a departure lounge. And again, the devotees were allowed, I mean, anybody was allowed to go into the departure area. And they were having a very melodious kirtan. And people were going by. And one well-dressed, obviously well-to-do man came by and saw the devotees seated there and became curious, and his eyes caught Prabhupada. Satchinandan Swami said, he was watching him specifically. And right there on the spot, the man paid obeisances in his suit and put down his briefcase and paid obeisances, just being in Prabhupada's presence. How powerful. A businessman, a wealthy businessman, just being in Prabhupada's presence. So the holy name of Krishna has Nijasarva Shakti, has all spiritual potency. And by association with those who have such attraction for the holy name, and in the association of those who are trying to cultivate that attraction for the holy name, our attraction can be elevated also. But elevated to something that's natural, not something that's artificial. Something that's already within us in a very natural Krishna conscious state. So, we're down here. Our goal is somewhere far from where we are right now. There's a big gap between us and what we understand our goal to be. It is. But gradually, by careful practice of sadhana bhakti, in the association of others who are also very attentively performing their devotional practices, and hearing from our present devotees and the predecessor acharyas who want to give that gift to us, that awakened attraction for Krishna, gradually, by that cultivation, Krishna consciousness is a type of cultivation, Rupa Goswami describes, that natural attraction for Krishna, the natural enthusiasm and thirst and taste for Krishna will become something that will be within our experience also. So, I thought I would end with that and see, we didn't have so much time during our weekend together for questions, and devotees that like to ask questions, have discussion. We'll take some time. We're supposed to gather together again in the temple room, the hall over there, at 5 o'clock. So we can take some time for some discussion on what we just spoke about, or what you heard or experienced, or some sharing you'd like to do. Yeah.
I have a question related to or means getting attracted to Krishna, or say a person who doesn't even never a devotee of Krishna, who doesn't even know anything about Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. I'm a candidate for that description.
So even though he was never a devotee of Krishna consciousness, but naturally it's there in his him. The love is there within him, but it requires a great effort to awaken that. So I just want to compare that with the love of a parent towards a child. So love of parent towards child, it doesn't require any effort. It just happens naturally, and it's very unconditional. Why does it require a great effort to develop attractiveness or love towards our own father?
Excellent question. It's a very similar question to what I asked the children at that home program. You heard that?
Yes. They said the soul...
The soul says yes, the senses say, I want to enjoy. And the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. It's a diseased condition. The answer is, it's completely unnatural. It's not at all rational. It's likened to, Prabhupada gives the example, of a teenager, rebellious teenager, that tells his mother and father, I'm leaving home. I'm 18 now. I'm leaving. You can say yes or no, but I'm leaving. Oh, please don't go. I'm leaving. It's a rebellious spirit. And all the sensible arguments that the loving parents provide fall on deaf ears. You'll struggle. You'll suffer unnecessarily. We love you. Stay here. Everything is provided. I'm leaving. There isn't a good reason. It's misuse of free will. And for so long, it's not just once upon a time we had misuse of free will. There's a continual moment-to-moment misuse of free will, because we can change it at any moment to proper use. We still have to pay the consequences of our previous misuse of free will. That's where the the senses say, I want to enjoy, and the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. Well, what's the independence, and what's the enjoying? It's neither enjoying nor independence. It's a disease. We're in a disease state. So in a disease state, that which is natural isn't operative. When one has fever, there's no hunger. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the very thing, nourishment, that can make one well, the body rejects when you have fever. You can't, if you have no appetite, and if you did, it would increase the fever. It's a disease. And that disease is the consequence of that which makes no sense. Another way of asking the question you're asking is, how do we come to this condition? You're asking it, you know, why this condition? There's no good reason. It's not a reasonable reason. Not a good reason. The reason is we misuse our free will. So we're suffering as a consequence. A very unnatural condition of life. And that, you know, to go take it one step further, that attraction that the mother and father have for the child, that's a reflection, and the attraction that the child has for the mother and father, it's a reflection of the original love that Krishna has for us and that we have for Krishna. And we accept that one instead of this one. Our love for Krishna. That's the diseased condition. And even that which is religious, like, you know, I dutifully worship God. Built into it is a desire for sense gratification and yet a higher grade of sense gratification in a heavenly realm, commonly. Or liberation, but not, you know, service to Krishna, simply for service to Krishna. It's selfish, which is a very unwholesome condition, a diseased condition. Yes. You want to know, is whoever your spiritual master is in this life was the same spiritual master in a previous life? That's your question. And by inference, it goes into the next life too. Well, Srila Prabhupada and on one of the Vyasa Puja ceremonies for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote an essay, and Bhaktisiddhanta acclaimed that essay as very, very brilliant, where the spiritual master is one. Let's just take the example of Bilvamangala Thakur. You know that story of Bilvamangala Thakur's life? He had in his life he had a spiritual master named Somagiri. And he left his spiritual practice and became very fallen. He became he left his brahminical practices and became attracted to a prostitute named Chintamani. Detailed description. At one point he was so, there's a terrible, terrible storm, but he was lusty, and so he went in the midst of this terrible downpour of rain and wind and had to cross a river. There was no boatman. There was a dead body floating down the river, so the assistance of the dead body, he crossed the river. Then he came to Chintamani's residence, and it was there was a big wall. To climb the wall, he used a snake to climb the wall. Very determined to go see Chintamani. When he came to Chintamani, she saw this condition. Said, if you only had such attraction for Krishna that you have for this pale material body, you'd be a pure devotee. Those words struck him in such a way, he understood it was Somagiri speaking. through her. So in his writings later, he accepts her as his spiritual master, representing Somagiri. But it's not the same person. So it's a little subtle or esoteric to say the spiritual master is one, because it's not, certainly not impersonalism. Prabhupada didn't write an essay of impersonalism. But the principle of spiritual master is a principle that's an empowerment of Lord Nityananda, which may be embodied by one person, another person. It doesn't depersonalize the spiritual master, but it's a empowerment coming from Lord Nityananda that enables one to carry out such service. So, you know, it's kind of like saying simultaneously yes and no. It's like, you know, if I say I have an orange ball and a green ball and I'm going to throw them to you both at the same time, see if you can catch them. Poop. So it's a yes and a no. The personality is not the same personality, but it's in principle the same. Spiritual master is one. Guru is one. Guru Tattva is one. One who delivers is the representative of that Guru Tattva, who is simply carrying out a service for Lord Nityananda, who wants to bring souls to Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet so he can deliver them. Love of God. Yes?
How does one recognize this message coming? How does one know that it's the spiritual master speaking?
Well, in the case of Vilvamangala Thakur, he was very elevated. In our case, we're not. So our capacity isn't the same. However, at the same, you know, we're not so likely to be in the same situation that he was in either. The question that you're asking reminds me of a question I heard somebody ask Srila Prabhupada, where Prabhupada was giving a lecture about the importance of accepting the spiritual master, and it was a, you know, kind of impulsive American young fellow. Right in the middle of class, he interrupted Prabhupada speaking and said, "Swamiji, how do I know who is a spiritual master?" So I probably just stopped the class and answered his question. And he answered his question this way. He said, there's a responsibility to understand what a spiritual master is before you try to find a spiritual master. Then he gave an example. He said, for example, you may go to Chinatown. There's 22nd Avenue is not far from Chinatown. And you may say, I want a diamond. But if you don't know what is a diamond, before you go asking for a diamond, you're likely to be cheated. They'll give you a piece of glass and tell you it's a diamond. So before you go to the diamond store, you must know what a diamond is when you ask for a diamond. Then he went back. Similarly, when understanding who is the spiritual master, you must have a fundamental, it's your responsibility, to have a fundamental understanding what a spiritual master is, what constitutes Guru Tattva, at least in principle. Then you can look for a spiritual master, and when you have that understanding, you have a sincere desire to find spiritual master, Krishna will send. And you'll know. And if you don't know, then you don't know. You know. In Nectar of Instruction, it is said that it's the duty of the spiritual master to examine the disciple, the duty of the disciple to examine the spiritual master. One of Tamal Krishnamurti's disciples is named Kastuba. And Kastuba said, one of the things, it was in the Vyasa Puja of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He said, one of the things that I appreciate about Tamal Krishna Maharaj was he was, at the same time he was very, very elevated, he was also, he grew up in New York City, so he was street smart. gave an example. He said he wanted to go buy a watch, and so they went together, Kasturba and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You're in a Brooklyn shop near the Brooklyn Temple. And he asked for a watch that had a crystal covering of the watch, not glass. The man said, oh, this has crystal. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj looked at the man right in the eye and took the watch and put it on the counter and said, if I scrape this across the glass of your counter, which one is going to scratch? Is this going to shatter, or is the glass going to cut? And he started moving it. Go ahead, because it's crystal. I don't care, I'll buy it. No, New Yorker. So it's the duty of a disciple. So you know the principle Krishna sends, I have a sincere desire, then you examine. It's not blind. It's the duty. We were going to pass some GBC legislation explaining that. You know, have seminars so aspiring disciples can learn. It's their responsibility. It's not, you know, the GBC says, okay, here's the assembly of personalities, pick one. And then somebody has a problem, so now it's the GBC's fault because they put up the assembly of personalities. It's the duty of the disciple, and it's the duty of the spiritual master to examine the disciple. Yes?
Said it's the duty of a disciple to analyze his spiritual
Examine.
Examine. So, we have also heard that you are not, disciple is not in a position to examine.
Well, we're not in a position to, how to say this properly? I'll try to select the right words carefully. There are standards by which someone who can lead us to Krishna can be understood. We don't like hook them up to a Uttama Adhikari meter and see how high they go. Because we don't have that would be offensive, nor do we have that qualification to make that kind of examination or evaluation. But there are standards within Bhagavad Gita. Someone who is equal in all circumstances of life, who is steady in their execution of devotional service. They're not intermittent in their devotional service. Where there's some doubt, that doubt can be removed. There's some standards like that that one should examine. Okay, there's the teachings that I hear from my spiritual master are the same as the teachings that I hear from Srila Prabhupada. It's another one. And then here's another one, that their behaviors match their teachings. So those are things that we can, but what we're advised to not try to enter into is, you know, what's their level of realization? That's what's ill-advised. That we don't have the capacity, even if it was disclosed. You know, people sometimes ask, have you seen Krishna? A reporter asked Prabhupada that question once. Swamiji, have you seen God? And Prabhupada's reply was, if I told you, would you believe me? In the same kind of tone he gave. And then the man said, yes. Then Prabhupada said, he was very grave, silent. I said, not only I have seen Krishna, but I am seeing him all the time. Now do you believe me? Whatever you say, Swamiji. I don't know what that means, but whatever you say. Yes.
What exactly has influenced you?
We're really off topic, but... just like this discussion right here, two things, primarily, that any doubt, And any question that I had, Prabhupada completely satisfied. And he didn't just say, he did. He was everything that he said. He didn't say one thing, do another thing. I hadn't met anybody like that. It was easy. Yes?
You said about Trithaka.
Yes. Thank you for getting back on topic.
That you said, even in chanting, you got the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and concentrate.
Yes. Well, it didn't exactly concentrate. As I was saying each word, my eye was going to the word, the sound, and the symbol, you know, the letters, because letters are just symbols.
So, do we, whenever we are of the mind, do we need to concentrate on the mantra or on the Krishna?
But there's no difference. Now, it's, you know, this is a particular exercise. It doesn't mean that if you don't do that, you can't chant properly. It's an exercise or a discipline to keep the mind from wandering. It's on Krishna. But there are other exercises or disciplines that can keep the mind on Krishna. So, just want to clear that thing up. It's not merely a device because the name and Krishna are non-different. Okay? Yes? Yes? The two go together. Of the two, the sound vibration is more important, but it enhances, deity worship enhances, they go together. There's many things to say about how they go together, but one of the things that Prabhupada commonly spoke about, or often spoke about, was because we have these bodies and a bodily conception of life that goes along with these bodies, to apply that bodily conception to a form. Now, the sound is not just some amorphous energy. There's nama-rupa. But we don't, our consciousness is not spiritually evolved enough to connect with nama rupa, or just it's sound vibration. But our eyes can see the deity form, just like this example of Trithaka. We can see the letters of Krishna's name and connect the sound and the form of Krishna. But it's not even that, like I just today, it's Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Krishna is, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, but it's not the form of Krishna, it's the form of Lord Chaitanya. But by their mercy, they can bring us to Krishna. They're delivering love for Krishna. So the deity form can help. But when worshipping deities while chanting, the important thing is the chanting, not your mind going to the deity while chanting. Then your mind is over here and the sound is in the background. That's not what's to happen. The sound is the foreground. And the deities are giving mercy to help you fix your mind upon the sound of Krishna's name. Yes. Both of you.
You would again take the discussion off.
Off topic, okay.
Were there any challenges you faced?
Yes. Only one. And that was, it was very, very easy because it was so satisfying and very natural, and it was, you know, becoming a devotee was easy. Then I was living in the Boston Temple, Hare Krishna devotee living in the Boston temple. And every day, we went chanting Harinam Sankirtan at Boston Common. Boston Common is a place where the Red Line subway and the Green Line subway both have stops. A lot of people would come in the downtown Washington Street. You know, it's like a very busy spot, especially at lunch hour. So we went there every day chanting. And over this way was a big church, and over that way was a big church. So it started to happen. I didn't, like, you know, anticipate it happening. But I started, this doubt started to come. What am I doing? Am I, in the biblical, one of the disciples of Christ was Judas, and he denied Christ. It's a deep, long story, but, so am I like that? I'm betraying Christ? And it became this existential dilemma for me. It didn't last too long, because I realized, no, not at all. I'm doing that which Christ taught better than I was doing before. What he taught was to love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. I'm doing that. I'm not betraying. I'm fulfilling. So this is, you know, a graduation from the form to another form, but the essence is now more complete. But that was about it. You know, the family thing and, you know, peer associate, you know, it wasn't a problem. Sometimes for people it's a problem, but I didn't have a problem. Some kids that I won't go into it. Some of the people that I knew from college came and visited me at the temple. You know, they were wanting to pull me out. But they saw it was hopeless. They didn't even try. Anything else? Yes. You're a new devotee at the beginning step. Is it okay to chant where? Is it okay to go back sometimes? If I understood your question correctly, my answer would be, make little steps, but don't go back. Huh? Yeah. Whatever you do, do that which is sustainable. You can do every day, every day, every day. Some days you can do more, but some, in your own heart, there's something that I'm making this commitment to Krishna. This much. Some days I can do more, but this much I commit to Krishna. It's not a contract, it's your heart. And don't go back. And when you feel inspired, you can make another commitment to Krishna. Something more. But don't go back.
Is it a good fortune?
Huh?
Is it a good fortune?
Sure. Good fortune? That's what you said? Yeah. The good fortune is Krishna's mercy. Krishna doesn't need anything from us. So, that should be very clear. That which we offer to Krishna, that's our benefit. And that's good fortune. Okay? Yes? Ten offenses. Yeah.
I have realized that most of I have committed those offenses.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is affecting my current...
Definitely.
So,
not just you, all of us. Here's the, I'll give a short answer and then we'll go over to the, join the other devotees. There's three stages. They're not like cubicle one and cubicle two and cubicle three. It's a whole spectrum, but for analysis' sake, there's three. And there's pure chanting. And there's offensive chanting, and there's clearing. So, in the clearing, there's still something. that's not right. The very important component of that clearing stage is you're trying to come to the offenseless. Even there may still be something that's inattentive chanting, for example. So, try to become attentive. And then you could say, well, sometimes I'm trying and sometimes I'm not so much trying. So, try to regularly try, strive for that, to become steady. And until the anartas of the heart are removed, they'll be unsteady. Unsteady. Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes, sometimes not. Unsteady. That's part of the anishtita bhakti stage, but overall the trajectory is, it's like, you know what a sine curve is, right? Up and down. And up. So, two things will happen if you're on the clearing stage. The amplitude will become less, and the axis upon which the sine curve travels will start to go up. So, you become gradually steady. So this it's a relationship between you and Krishna, where from your heart, you don't want to be offensive towards the Vaishnavas, towards the scriptures, towards the spiritual master, etc. Striving. That's the clearing stage. And gradually, that steadiness will come. Okay? Krishna will help. Just like that very nice example from Vishwanath Chakravarti. Krishna will see, oh, she's trying. Let me help her. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.